So I'll do my lead-in for the interview. So today is March 4th, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Eleanor Schultz is interviewing Mark Mastrian, and this is an online oral history. And we're going to talk about the Plattsburgh music scene today. So first question is, do you consent to this interview?
Yes.
Okay. So the second one is, how long have you lived in Plattsburgh?
Since 1982.
So I know Deborah said that you took classes at SUNY Plattsburgh.
Yeah, I came here in 82. I was a student for a couple of years. I worked at the college. I started out as an admissions counselor and kind of worked my way up. Took a break and went to college at McGill up in Montreal for a short time. And came back to work in a different capacity, and here I am in the library.
That's interesting. So what were you originally studying?
My academic background is in English and history and religion.
I was a history undergrad.
Aha.
So how long have you worked for the library?
Good question. I think since 20, I wasn't actually in the library originally. We worked in a division that was known as Library and Information Technology Services, which essentially supervised and included the library and all IT technology teams on campus. So I worked as assistant dean in that area. And I think I was in that capacity since about 2017 or so. And LITS, as we called it, broke up, and now it's Feinberg Library and ITS. And I do a little, I'm the assistant director of the library, but I still have a role in IT as well.
That's interesting. I know Deborah said you were the PR guy. Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess I am. Communications, public relations, marketing. Yeah, that's one of my jobs.
So when did you first meet Tim Hartnett?
I actually met him in 1983. He was, I'm a drummer, so I was interested in playing around town, so I stuck a note up at the music store, and someone who knew Tim stopped by my apartment and said, you got to meet Tim Hartnett. So it turns out Tim Hartnett lived two doors down from me, and he came over to see me, and then that was such a long time ago, but we ended up forming a band back in the 80s in Plattsburgh, New York, called Says Who, spelled S-E-Z-H-U, and we were doing sort of rock, pop, dance music, Pat Benatar, Heart, Genesis, quite a potpourri of stuff for people to dance to. And probably the interesting thing about that era was it was a time where bands could still play live in a lot of places. There was no such thing as DJs. There was no such thing as digital music, of course. And eventually the big change, I think, that happened to musicians was the birth of the DJ, and DJs used to travel around with huge cases of vinyl albums. So Tim actually became a DJ, and he was known as Mr. Tim, was his DJ service, which was always my nickname for Tim. So he kind of adopted that as his DJ name, and he was a musician and a DJ, which was very unusual.
Wow, and then when did the DJs come into the scene? Like the 80s?
Yeah, it was the 80s. We still had vinyl record shops in town. And then around that time, in the late period, you know, we started to get digital. We started to get I mean, first there was the way the history went, there was vinyl records. There were vinyl records, I should say. And then tapes. There were old style tapes that were 8-track tapes and cassette tapes. And the old 8-track tapes went out of existence. And for a while we had records and we had tapes, little cassette tapes. And then in that era was the birth of the Sony Walkman, was a big item where so people could go running with their and listen to their music. That was a huge revolution. You didn't have to sit down with a vinyl record in a record player. And then right behind that, digital came along, and then you ended up with CDs. And of course, in the video scene, you were starting to get that technology. Digital technology was coming in, and they were moving out of videotapes, VHS, to digital formats for playing back movies. Eventually, as time went on, even the digital world changed, and now it's streaming and cloud services.
Yeah, I remember cassette tapes when I was a kid, but I think that was at the end stages of it. So, did you guys ever tour in your band together, or?
Well, the music scene, we were kind of just a little local band. You know, Plattsburgh's a small town, so, you know, we were able to play in clubs. Before I came to Plattsburgh, I was living in Boston and playing in clubs in the city of Boston. And Boston was extremely different because it's not one of the big music meccas in the United States like Los Angeles or Nashville, but it has had a really strong music scene, and it had an especially strong original music scene, which is a thing unto itself. So there were bands that played in different circuits, bands that were original bands that were essentially trying to land record contracts and write their own music. And then there were what are called cover bands that played on a different circuit in different clubs. And they basically did versions of hit songs. So I worked in the city of Boston playing original music clubs for a short time. And then when I came here, got into the little rock and roll scene back in the day. And there were still, you know, I think between the city of Plattsburgh and the surrounding area, there was a good little group of basically bars that we could play in. Sometimes we would travel as far as Saranac Lake, which is about an hour away, or over to Vermont, across the lake, and play jobs over there. But mostly we just stayed around town and played bars.
So you moved to Plattsburgh in early 80s, you said? Mm-hmm. And then before you were in Boston?
Yep.
What are you doing, I guess, besides playing in Boston? Were you?
That's a great question. That's a very interesting question because it's hard to make music. It's hard to make money playing music. So I was trying to work as a musician and get started, but I worked as a security guard to make ends meet. And I was a security guard in several facilities in Boston and around Boston. The Boston Kidney Center was my main job site, working for a company called California Plant Protection.
What was that about?
Yeah, security guards, we're the guys if you watch the movies, we're the guy that gets killed in the first scene because he has to go look for the funny noise in the storeroom. Those are the security guards.
Oh.
I act at the kidney center. This is off the topic of music, but I actually had to evacuate the kidney center with all the kidney center patients in the middle of winter because we had a credible bomb threat.
Jeez.
But security guards, they don't pay us to carry guns or anything like that. So, yeah, we basically call the police if there's anything major.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, my boyfriend was just talking about that last night where his car got hit when he was in a college campus. And, like, he had to do the security guard report and then also the police report, too. Like, I guess no communication, maybe.
And here in the state of New York at the State University campuses, we no longer have security guards. They're university police. They're actually real police officers. It was controversial at the time, but they do carry guns now.
Yeah, maybe that's more of a trend now, because I think University of Washington also has that, like, police. Let's see, so you were a drummer?
Yep.
And was Tim, I think Cass said, plays a guitar? I can't remember.
Yeah, Tim, you know, for the, professionally, I just play drums. I mean, can play guitar a little bit on the side, but really I'm just a drummer. Tim could play guitar and keyboards. And he sings too.
Yeah, that's right. I think Cass said like her and her brother would do duets together, I think.
Yeah, I know he did them with his sister Shauna.
Oh, right, yeah.
They had a little, it was a kind of a more of a folky kind of group. And Tim was an all-purpose musician. He liked to go around and play by, you know, solo gigs, and he would play with his sister Shauna sometimes. He began playing as a bass player on and off with a band called Zip City, a little blues band in town.
It's pretty fun. And he also was a DJ.
And then he was a DJ too, yeah. Oh. Very sociable person, so a nice personality for a DJ.
So do you remember any events you've been to at SUNY Plattsburgh? Like, did you ever go to the events?
Not a whole lot. I remember a few. We saw the Kinks here. It's Tim and I would go. We saw the Pretenders. They had, it was at a time, you know, after they had a death of a member, and they had a slightly different lineup, but Chrissy Hynde, the lead singer of the Pretenders, was just starting a tour, either a national tour or a world tour, I don't know. And her first stop, I believe, was Plattsburgh, which might sound weird, but I think the logic, and somebody else would know more than me, that the story that I heard at the time was that a place like Plattsburgh, especially being close to Montreal, was kind of a good place to just stop and play and kind of smooth out the routine a little bit before they went into the really big venues. And the night the Pretenders played, they were not sounding very good. The acoustics and the PA system was not working in their favor. And the lead of the band, Chrissy Hynde, was visibly upset during the show at her bass player. There were kind of like a lot of dirty looks and things. I heard later, something that could be looked up, I guess. I heard later that the bass player was fired from the tour before it hardly even got started. But so they did work the bugs out a little bit at SUNY Plattsburgh.
Yeah, I've noticed that with some of the responses I've gotten from the survey. There's one that said like something about how some of the people who went there to tour, they would be, if they had an attitude of, like, about doing it such a small venue, then the audience could kind of feel that.
Yeah. I can tell you a brief anecdote that I was at SUNY Morrisville when I first left high school, and I was the entertainment guy on their college union board. So I booked the acts for the college, and we had booked Roger McGuinn, who is a fairly famous musician from the California folk rock days. Played with a band called The Birds, but he was playing here as Roger McGuinn. And I was running one of the big cannon lights that they have up on platforms. I just kind of got co-opted into it, probably because they didn't want to hire more lighting crew or something. But so it was kind of a big deal to have a big celebrity name, but he was clearly stoned out of his mind for the concert. And it was obvious that he was not completely with the performance. And so, as you say, the crowd picked up on it. And later, after the event was over, we got a in the College Union Board office, he sent an autographed photograph of himself to the president of the Union Board with a note on it that said, her name was Ellen. He said something, it was something like, "Hi Ellen, sorry I was stoned for the concert." So famous celebrity documentation. Imagine that might be worth some money by now.
I mean, at least he acknowledged it or remembered. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So have you been to a couple SUNY schools or just these two?
Just those two, yeah.
Nice.
Bands that play at colleges, you know, they have a contract and they have all these little riders that they put in the contract that you have to comply with. And it'll be, it's not unusual to have, you know, a certain amount of beer, for example, exactly the right brand, how cold it has to be or what food has to be served. And they'll put all these little things in the contract. So, you know, if you're a student running these and looking at the contracts, part of the experience, which is really good, really professional, is to see how the contracts are written and then have to do the legwork to come up to work with the employees of the college, you know, student activities directors and things, and make sure the contract is fulfilled.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is there any other anecdotes about that time?
Well, I ran the coffee house at Morrisville. I guess I did more music at Morrisville than I did Plattsburgh. I ran the coffee house. It was called the Inner Egg Cafe, and I booked all the coffee house acts, and I was a little bit more involved in that world.
That's interesting. It's interesting about the contracts. Like, I've heard about, you know, those kind of demands for like bigger venues. I didn't know they would do that for like college venues. Yeah.
Well, when I first went to college, the drinking age was 18, and there wasn't a paranoia about drinking on campus among college officials the way there is now. So, for example, when the college hired a band, even like a band to play in the club, there would be a bar on campus, and they would hire bands to come in, not necessarily huge name acts, but more regional acts that played. When they brought those bands in, they would have tons and tons of beer for the students. I remember being at events where they would literally back up a truck, a beer truck, with spigots out the side of the truck so that students could just walk up to the truck and fill their little red plastic beer cup. Days were different back then.
They still had the red plastic solo cups back then?
They still had those, yeah. There's a trend.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't think about solo clubs having such a long history.
And colleges all over the place had bars in those days. Then the drinking age changed, and there was more of a sensitivity to, you know, maybe helping students be responsible drinkers and whatnot. And the world is very different. Now the administration wouldn't even allow a legal aged student to drink wine at a reception. We've even had that kind of pushback.
Huh. I never did the crazy party scene, so I never really got the rules. Let's see. Is there any other stories?
I don't think so. Tim really had all the best stories. And you already have all his information, right, of all the acts that were booked here?
Yeah.
So you could see there were some big name acts that were even before Tim's time that were playing college. They were probably playing the college circuits in those days.
Yeah. I think we're going to, Deborah and Joshua and I are going to look at the survey responses and see if there's any that Tim missed, because a lot of people mentioned, like, not random ones, but a lot of like small ones that we hadn't thought about.
The thing we're trying to track down that nobody's been successful is Tim knew a student who worked with the college entertainment here at the college, and he was very interested in like becoming a promoter, a rock impresario or promoter or something. And I remember Tim telling me he did go on to do that, and we can't remember his name. And I looked through my correspondence with Tim. It must have been something he told me over dinner or something, but that would be very interesting to track down that person.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. Like, do you remember what era that was, or?
It probably would have been the 70s, I would think.
Oh, okay, well.
Going way back. But in the era when there were all those big concerts coming here.
Yeah, it's true. And when did that end? Was that, I don't know, I feel like the last survey responses I saw were from like 2004. So there's
yeah. I'm not in touch with the students in this way enough to know the answer, but it, you know, from someone who's, you know, seen this sort of a few decades go by, the students don't seem to be interested in concerts the way they once were. You know, we don't see, I don't know if it's because they don't have the money. I mean, they did, after a while, they started bringing, you know, there were some rap acts that came here and some more contemporary kinds of things, but they were bringing like comedians and hypnotists and things like that, but I didn't see them bringing the big name shows. But I don't think that's completely the result of a change in the students. I think that's a change in the music industry.
What do you mean, like?
Well, in the 70s, like just like take New York State as just an example. Syracuse, New York is in the middle of the state, and there was a thriving little music scene that was emanating out of there, where there were promoters in Syracuse and there were people that would put bands on the circuit. So there would be bands that were just like a little bigger than like a little local band, but they were doing regional tours and they were booking out of places like Buffalo and Syracuse. I think especially after the DJ era, so much dried up. And in this day and age too, musicians have to deal with copyright infringement, which we didn't have to deal with at all. We could play any song we want anytime, anywhere. But now the music is copyrighted through BMI or ASCAP, and club owners have to pay a fee to basically be able to book acts that are going to play other people's music. You can see artists who are vloggers on YouTube who are blocked all the time the minute they start playing copyrighted music. So there's been a huge crackdown on copyrighted music that did not exist back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, even though music was copyrighted. But because of the ease of reproduction and redistribution of material that is written and owned by artists, the industry has evolved to a whole different kind of set of protocols.
Yeah, I guess I do go on YouTube and I do, you know, see those like little blurbs that people do on their videos now. It's mm-hmm. like, this is copyrighted by them. I didn't know that club owners had to do that though. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, even Tim was going up to Lake Placid or Saranac Lake, I can't remember. In recent times, before he died, and I think he was going up to play possibly with his sister, but maybe with another outfit. And he booked the job, and the club owner called him back and said, I have to cancel you because he just learned how much he would have to pay. I think they have to pay by month. And he just said he didn't want to pay it and he didn't want to take the chance of doing anything illegal. So he, even a little kind of almost insignificant local act, the club owner was too nervous to book him. I have no doubt there aren't a lot of club owners that ignore the policy, but they could technically be sued and maybe lose a lot of money.
Well, like, even if they're not like doing a video of the performance, just if they're playing it live?
Just playing it, yep. And I'm not an expert in this, so I would fact check all that, but that's the story Tim told me.
Jeez. It's like reporters, I guess, now in clubs.
Yeah, who knows? Mm-hmm. My last band was a little jazz blues band that we played in a local club here in town, and I never heard any mention of the copyright issues, so I don't know if they were being ignored or they were just not being mentioned to the musicians. Now, bands can play music that is out of copyright, that is free domain, which would not be an issue. But if you were to go on there and play Adele or something, you would be, you know, more liable.
Interesting. I guess I didn't really think about those kind of issues with live music before.
Yeah, maybe an old time blues number that's not in copyright anymore or something, that wouldn't matter. But certainly if you started playing the hit songs, you might be in trouble.
So are you part of any band now or?
No, I've been kind of laying low. I don't know if I'll be playing again. Who knows? Drummers have the disadvantage of having to carry a lot of heavy equipment around. And you get to the point in your life where you just don't feel like staying up all night and carrying heavy equipment around.
Yeah, that's fair. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, I'm sorry we lost Tim, my good friend. He would have been such a wealth of information to you. He had a history background and he had an archival brain and he was incredibly social. Everybody knew Tim. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere with Tim without, 10 people saying hi to Tim. And he played widely and he knew a lot of musicians and he knew a lot of the local history. So unfortunately, I'm not up to that. But so we missed him in that regard very much.
I know, I've heard a lot about him. But this has been really helpful. Thank you.
Well, I'm very happy to help you such as it is. And I wish you well with your project.
Thanks. I'll send you the recording after I look at it. View. I'll send the transcript too in the release form.
Sounds good. Thanks, Eleanor.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Hey, take care.